would tell about the love that lived and died inside these walls, and the sound of little footsteps running up and down the hall.
This is KZFR 90.1 in Chico, and you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Susan Chudy.
I'm Stephen Chudy. This afternoon, we'll be talking with Richard Harriman, longtime Chico attorney, general counsel for the Northern California Environmental Defense Center. Our conversation will focus on the City of Chico's housing element update of the general plan, which has just been launched and will proceed for the next year and a half.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico's Certified Farmers Markets, featuring three markets in Butte County, year-round Wednesday morning in Chico and at the North State Valley Plaza, Saturday year-round at 3rd and Wall in downtown Chico, and a seasonal market Tuesday mornings in Paradise. The Chico Farmer Certified Farmers Market, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980. The opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We'll be back to talk to Richard Harriman about what's at stake in the housing element update for the City of Chico.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire.
Rest your head for just
that you're bored today.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico. Our guest this evening is Richard Harriman. Richard is a longtime Chico attorney and general counsel for the Northern California Environmental Defense Center. Welcome, Richard. Thank you for coming on.
Well, good evening to you and Steve. Nice to be with your show for the first time for me.
Yeah, it is the first time. I don't know how that came to be, but let's take advantage of it now. Our conversation tonight is going to be about the update of the Chico housing element. It started, maybe a month or so ago, the process for updating the Chico housing element, and it will go on for about a year and a half. And I just want to inform our listeners about what this means. There's a general plan in Chico. It's a guide for how we want our city to grow and change and whatever it's going to be doing in the future. And the housing element is just one of many elements of the general plan. Can you just say something about the general plan, just to let people know how it works? It's required by state law?
That's correct, Susan. It's required by government code section 65302 and 65300. The housing element is one of the keystones of the mandatory elements of the general plan, of which there are now nine, including the most recent one, which is the environmental justice element, which was added 2 or 3 years ago and will be coming in presumably with the review of this housing element.
And the housing the update involves looking at the last housing element, what went on, what was asked for in the last housing element, and then data gathering and an analysis of community needs and then some community input. And so they held their first community forum, the housing element people in Chico, but also a consulting firm that comes together to do this work, to create this process. You and I both attended that meeting. What were your expectations for that meeting, and how did you think it went? This is community information gathering. This is community input.
I was not surprised, but I was underwhelmed nonetheless because I was hoping that, given the city staff's longtime expectation of having to update this housing element, which occurs every 8 years, that they would have had a consultant and staff that would be emphasizing more of an open and transparent approach. My expectations were not disappointed because I've seen these types of so-called community involvement processes that are done especially during the COVID-19 epidemic or pandemic, because it doesn't really allow for public input. This particular review or this particular exposure to the public of this element, I thought was cramped and shaped and formed in a manner to create a predetermined result and outcome. Let me say one other thing that's really important for your listeners and all the residents of this community to understand is that the housing element has to be viewed in terms of its performance. It probably has some of the best performance requirements by statute, along with the other element of general plan updates, which is the general plan implementation action plan, which gets reviewed every year, along with the budget, the capital improvement program, the development impact mitigation fees, the review of the general of the EIR for the general plan. Every year the general plan gets reviewed for performance. And so the housing element isn't something that you can just skip over. You encounter it once a year in the annual review. So when the performance data comes out for the eight-year term, you shouldn't really be too surprised by the outcome. And I think most of us were surprised by the data at that meeting a week or so ago with respect to how abysmal our performance was. Final point, and Lynn, let you and get a word in edgewise.
Mm-hmm.
The other factor that we really need to be mindful of as a community is that November 8 of 2018, a date which will live in infamy, knocked our old general plan
yes.
that was adopted in 2011 into a cocked hat. We really have a totally new set of circumstances now, so that may be another issue that we want to discuss this evening, Susan.
Yes, absolutely. Steve, did you want to add something?
I wasn't in on this meeting, but I wanted to just reinforce what you said, Richard, about the way the deck is stacked in such meetings. I've been in a number of them over the years where staff or somebody comes in with a plan in mind and says, oh, we want community input, and there are voices on both sides. It's all taken down very scrupulously in the notes, homogenized, and what comes out, the state says, the staff says, well, we had a pretty good idea in the first place. We'll just proceed with it.
Well, you know, Steve, on that point, I shared with Susan when we visited prior to this evening's program, and I shared with her that I participated with public interest clients down in the city of Bakersfield and the county of Kern, and I very rarely would say nice things about their planning process or environmental review, but they had a very open and much more expansive community input. And granted, it was during a non-COVID time, but that doesn't mean that we should just skip over community involvement where people get to raise the issues that are of concern to them, because the whole idea of the housing element is to make sure that we provide adequate housing for all residents, not just a limited few.
I have a couple things to say about that. First of all, I want to just give a little bit of meat to these bones of the inadequacy of what happened at the forum. One is, it was, I think, an hour and a half. Maybe it was a little bit longer than that. And most of it was presentation, the breakout sessions in which people got to express their ideas about needs in the housing element was about maybe 45 minutes. And there's not another forum for community input until August. And so this is the paucity of the opportunities for input. The other part of that was that we could only talk about one aspect of it. The only thing that people wanted to hear on this housing update team were about affordable housing. They didn't want to hear anything about homelessness. They didn't want to hear anything about how the housing element relates to other aspects of the general plan. They didn't want to at all have a larger discussion about the general plan and how it needs to be changed. And finally, they didn't want to talk about environment or sustainability and so many aspects of the elements in the general plan are interrelated. You can't just isolate one, but we weren't allowed to do that. I also wanted to say about what you said about expectations. In the last 8 years, and this was reported in the Chico Enterprise Record, 77.5%, they have four layers or four levels of housing: above moderate, moderate, low, and very low. And in the past 8 years, after the last housing update, 77.5% were above average of the houses built. 46% were moderate. 1.5% were very low and 1.3% were low. And the housing staff now emphasizes that there are a lot of multifamily units underway, but that last accounting is abysmal, given that the needs are even greater now for low and very low income. They're projecting that 1,101 units are required for very low, 507 units for low, 770 for moderate, and 1,110. We need to talk about those figures a little bit too, because it goes to your point in our discussion about what kind of community we want to have. Do you have any comments about that?
Yes, you're reminding me. I looked into the general plan guidelines, and I wanted to read one of the lines from the state's guidelines. It says that the state law is that the availability of housing is a matter of vital statewide importance, and the attainment of decent housing and a suitable environment for all Californians is a priority of the highest order. That's a statutory directive. And I think what you and I are looking at here is the abysmal performance of the other housing levels other than just the ones that the local builders who own all the land want to do. So, and the other thing that struck me was the same as across your mind and lips tonight, is that the community is looking at what we want to have. What is the kind of community Chico wants to be? And Chico is such a unique community statewide. It's one of the towns that I frame in my experience over 45 years in the whole Central Valley. It's a what we call an intentional community. People choose and want to come to Chico. Well, that's both a blessing and a curse, but the fact of the matter is, what many of us like about Chico is the intimacy, the diversity, the different kinds of people we have, the idea that we can make a community that can be more than just a roof over our head and three squares and a cot. And that, I think, it was notably absent in terms of our discussion. We never got to get into any of the really significant issues about what we our expectations are in this community. And even if they're all different. I mean, I sat in a breakout section that had the scarcely hidden names of C. Giampoli, Chris Giampoli, and also Bill Broward was in the breakout session along with Katie Toma. So we had a good group that should have been able to exchange and have a really good dialogue, but the format didn't allow it.
Can you say who those people are and why their perspectives might have been important in that discussion?
Well, I think as you and I discussed and came out in our breakout session, the Chico City Chamber of Commerce had conducted an inventory or an analysis, and the report was released very fortuitously just shortly before the housing element meeting was held. And there was a lot of blowback in the ER from people saying, well, that doesn't represent necessarily what I want to. Chris Giampoli is the younger Giampoli who are the home builders for Epic Homes, mm-hmm. and build very, very high quality product. I would certainly say no less privately, but publicly, they have very, very high product. Mm-hmm. But it is of a specific kind. It's a subdivision type of housing. It's sort of San Jose modern. And Bill Broward is the proponent for the Valley's Edge. I'll call it a new town project, but it's a planned community to the east of the Stonegate project, which is currently in litigation. So those were the folks that, well, they were very polite. Jim didn't, Bill didn't say anything, and Chris and I had a good discussion, and I think we could have done more together if we had more time to talk about the issues.
Yeah, there really wasn't much of an opportunity for multiple perspectives to be, and there were questions that guided our answers, and so there really wasn't an opportunity for multiple perspectives to be brought out. much less to have the complexity of the answers to those questions be a part of what's reported about the community input. That another thing that interested me about the Chico ER article, Bryce Goldstein, who's the chair of the Planning Commission, said that the reporting out from, I was in her group, and the reporting out from our committee was not an accurate reporting out, that what was reported out was an emphasis on home ownership, when Bryce and I agreed that most of what people talked about in that session was the necessity for affordable housing. And in fact, they did a survey during that input session, and affordable housing was very high on the list. Individual housing like Valley's Edge and Stonegate, single homes. What do you call those kinds of houses?
Family residence.
Yeah, right.
Single family detached residences.
Exactly. They weren't a strong emphasis, even though that's where I think, as you were suggesting, the Chamber of Commerce would like us to go.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Richard Harriman about housing issues here in Chico and a recent planning meeting that was open to the public. I wanted to ask you two, I'm kind of on the outside in this discussion because I wasn't at the meeting, but do you know of builders and landlords and real estate people who can make reasonable amounts of money building affordable housing? The flip side of that question is, do you have to come in with factory-style home building on an epic proportion in order to make a reasonable amount off the project?
Richard?
Well, Stephen, I'm not sure that you're going to be happy with my comments, because I've had substantial experience doing mixed-use housing developments of, you know, thousands of acres, and seeing what is possible. We're in a really weird situation right now, and I think some of the actual facts are coming out that the costs of construction are huge right now. Mm-hmm. The demand, the low interest rates that are prevalent and look as though they're going to be for some more time, make it very, very difficult, I think, to build affordable housing, unless you accept the proposition that maybe we need to do a pivot and do a breaking of set. If we're going to do only single family detached housing with three bedroom, two bath, or four twos, or three ones, or whatever, that's only one kind of housing. There are plenty of other models in this state and elsewhere, and I'll cite several with positive affirmation. You look at Davis. Whether you want to live in this type of a community or not, if we're going to be able to survive the climate disruption that is apparent, and these recurrent wildfires that create unholy hell on earth, we're going to have to look at some different kind of housing. We're going to have to move toward a more dense housing, a much more consciously thought out. Some of the Doe Mill models is a good start, but for developers that have only worked from one business model or one approach toward a niche in the market, they're understandably resistant to change. But what they need to do is look at other communities where people have spent huge amounts of money. To get back to your question, Stephen, is can you make money? Of course you can make money. But if you have a rate of return that you expect from mm-hmm. what you've done mm-hmm. before, you're going to have that expectation. And I can tell you, if not as an expert witness, somebody who is experienced in this, that a rate of 15% to 25% is not an unheard of rate for the building community. I'm not saying in Chico, but certainly anywhere for 15% to 20% rate of return. Well, if you're spending $200 a square foot to build a house that's a single family model that we all have liked for the years, you're not going to be able to build affordable housing. It's not going to be possible unless we make a radical change in terms of what we want. And there are people out there, particularly the millennials and younger people, who don't want to be owned by their houses and who want renting or houses that are functional and reasonably priced so that they can have a life besides paying their mortgage.
I want to tell a brief story from Reno. There was a turning point in my thinking about what I call the factory model of laying out these huge developments. There was in Reno a guy who owned the world's best nail gun. And he was always in demand because he would go down the row of new construction houses and they say, Tuesday, bring in your nail gun and nail what has to be nailed. Wednesday, you go to the next house. And there were dozens and dozens of specialized people like this. And it's thus efficient if you're building lots of houses, but would by no means be efficient if you were building small, affordable units, one by one or five by five, rather than 400 at a time.
Well, you know, I digressing just a second, my wife is from Hong Kong, China, and I went back to visit the family, and they certainly are able to live in much smaller spaces than we are. Now, I'm not saying that that's what we want in Chico, but if we're going to do affordable housing with a decent roof over a family or young family or new professionals that have graduated from Chico State and want to stay here, I think we're going to have to change our frame of reference. We're going to have to look at some more different dimensions to housing and how we want to live.
Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to your question, too, about what kind of community do we want to have and what the Chamber of Commerce model or the Valley's Edge Stonegate model, who are their customers and what kind of community does the kind of development they're doing imply?
I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to answer that question. I think the clear, coordinated message and rollout that's come from the real estate development community and from the efforts by Assemblymember James Gallagher is to bring in large-scale subdivisions, mass production homes, higher range, not necessarily what the city of Chico needs and many people want. I think that this is a very coordinated political effort, and with all due respect, I think it's been pretty much railroaded on the community so far. So if you're not wanting to do that, those of you who are listening to this program on the air, then you need to let your voices be heard. And I think we saw a start of that in the ER's letters to the editor with people saying, no, we want some different choices. We want to have an opportunity to have a more diverse group of people. Otherwise, to answer your question directly, the people we're going to get are the same ones that the San Joaquin Valley and Sacramento is now getting, mm-hmm. which is a massive diaspora from the coastal communities, San Francisco Bay, L.A., and now Sacramento coming up north to Sacramento Valley, of people who can leave their Bay Area jobs with their Bay Area salaries and come out here to Chico and afford a $550,000 or $600,000 home in Meadowbrook up in North Chico, which a Chico young couple can't afford.
Right.
But if you're coming out with $1.5 million because you sold your house and you're buying a house for your kids and you're going to retire in another one and pay $550,000 or $600,000, that's a great result for you, but that pretty much limits the people who can afford to live here. So I think people are going to find, with this potential paradise sewer line and this Paradise Irrigation District intertie pipeline, we're going to find that it's going to be very, very expensive to live in Chico if we have to increase and double our infrastructure to serve the large number of people that seem to want to come here.
Can you say more about the relationship between the intertie and the sewer and housing development?
I would have to say it's informed or rational speculation or inference from what's happening. It looks to me as though, despite the fact that the Paradise pipeline, sewer pipeline, is touted as being for the benefit of Paradise, probably not so much. It's really more to get the expansion of the sewage treatment plant jump-started, trying to bring in state funds to override what the community would ordinarily want. And so what I see happening, as most of you, lots of you out there hopefully are driving a pickup truck and listening to this show, because you're members of the community and lots of other people are members of the community, but there's no union for residential home building contractors here in Chico or their work. Where there is a really strong union relationship is with the large operating engineers, the construction union construction personnel who will be working on such large infrastructure projects as the Paradise Pipeline, the Paradise Irrigation District Intertie, and then the expansion of the City of Chico's waste treatment facility. Those folks make $80,000, $100,000 a year because they've got great union benefits and strong unions. So as those union employees are invited to come to work in Chico for this foregone conclusion that we're going to connect Paradise with Chico so that the 300 people in Paradise can afford to have their sewage water come down to us, this makes no sense at all.
But what it does drive,
it's going to be consistent with the philosophy that's been advocated by some of the building industry folks and the real estate folks and Chamber of Commerce, is high salaries, young families that can afford to come up and live here and pay top dollars for the housing. And that's what will happen if you bring them up for these large-scale projects. They'll come up and they'll say, wow, why should I commute from Sacramento? I want to move up here.
Yeah.
At the same time, you're going to be getting the younger folks that are coming out of the Bay Area and are bringing their Bay Area salaries coming up here to say, well, I can live here and work out of my home and telecommute to the Bay Area or Sacramento. Those are not people who are living in Chico now. And they're not the kids that are going to get out of Chico State when and if we get them back as students.
Right.
So it's going to be a dramatic change in the demographics and the metric for what we're building for those demographics.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, and we're talking with Richard Harriman about the housing element and the future of our community based on the kinds of things that we're seeing in terms of preferences for kinds of housing. I wonder what, store clerks and gas station attendants and fast food workers and waiters and cooks, how can they even find a decent place to live? And I just imagine them, what's that new economy where people have three or four or five jobs in order to pay for their basic needs? So what's happening with them now? Do you know?
Yeah, I think in addition to the diaspora that came in from Paradise, I worked over in the court on the west side for 3 years when I first came back to Chico, and I met a lot of those folks. And it's interesting you asked that question, Susan, because with the Amazon Distribution Center, which has just been disclosed over in Glenn County, that's going to bring in 100 to 150 people at $15 to $18 an hour. $15 to $18 an hour doesn't sound like much, but it's a lot if you're not even making $15 an hour. So going back to your inquiry, so what about the people that aren't even making $15 an hour who are living in Chico now? And the folks from Amazon build their distribution center out there, and we've got another 100 and 150 employees coming in. Let's say two of them. Let's take them, $15 to $18 an hour, two of them. They still can't afford to buy a house in Chico.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to rent a higher-cost rental unit than will other people in Chico that don't make two incomes like that. But that just means more pressure on our limited inventory already. So my perception is that the real impetus is going to be to move low-income folks out of Chico. There just isn't going to be enough affordable or low-income housing here in Chico, which means then people will have to relocate to Oroville or Orland or Willows or Corning. Wait a second. Those people are also having their housing markets blown out by what happened from the Paradise Fire and from the incoming people coming in from the Bay Area. So frankly, I don't see any relief for low-income folks here. And Exhibit A for that is the people from Paradise that weren't living in starter castles, didn't have their mortgages paid off, or didn't have big insurance recoveries. Those people skipped like a stone on a pond and bounced out of the community. They aren't here anymore. Right, they're gone.
I want you to go back to one of the things that you mentioned earlier on in our discussion about how the general plan, how can we do a general plan? Do we have to start all with how much our demographics have changed and how much the face of the community has changed? What has to happen with the general plan, and what elements need to be totally reconsidered?
Well, the good news is that the housing element came up on its 8-year cycle 2 years after the Paradise Fire.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is that the general plan was adopted and the final environmental impact report for the city general plan certified in 2011. The problem is that one of the major points in the environmental review for a general plan is what's called the environmental setting, or the background environment. And that particular portion of our general plan has been blown to smithereens because of the change in the demographics of Paradise, which used to be a labor offload, if you will. People could work in Chico and live maybe less expensively up in Paradise or on the Ridge, or if they had a lifestyle affinity for that area up there, they had affordable housing up there. Well, it wasn't so affordable even when the fire came. And after the fire came, it completely blew the doors off our general plan assumptions. So it's my inference from reviewing the general plan guidelines and re-reviewing the Supreme Court case of DeVita versus the County of Napa. It's a 1995 Supreme Court case. We're going to have to not only update the housing element, we're going to have to redo the land use element, probably the safety element, certainly the circulation and transportation element. And with those will also come the new environmental justice element under Government Code Section 65302 sub H, which gets invoked when you deal with more than one or two mandatory elements. So we're looking at infrastructure, land use, environmental justice. We're really going to have to do a major update of our general plan, and we'll have to do a significant environmental review document. The city planners and their consultants may be assuming that this is going to be a walk in the park. It isn't. It isn't going to be, because the factors on the ground have changed so significantly. And I think they know that. They may not want to recognize it, but I think the public will bring that to their attention. So this process is going to end up being technically a one-year process or so to do the housing element. I don't know what they're planning to do about other projects that have to come in and be found in compliance with these other horizontal mandatory elements of the general plan. To me, it looks like it could grind to a halt just because of the fact that we haven't updated the general plan, even as we sit here now 2 years later.
I want to talk about this a little bit more, but I want to read the vision from the general plan, because I think it's so interesting. It says Chico in the year 2030 is a livable, healthy, sustainable community that offers a high quality of life with a strong sense of community in place. Chico maintains its small town character while providing opportunities for future generations to thrive. Government is transparent and politics are open and engaging. The city is characterized by a vibrant downtown, a healthy economy, compact urban form, identifiable neighborhoods with diverse housing choices, convenient access to locally produced goods, and a focus on alternative transportation and healthy lifestyles. Historic places and buildings are prominent, and Chico is celebrated for its diversity, arts, culture, outdoor access, recreational opportunities, and parks. It is known as a leader in innovative technology and education. Above all, it's a place we're proud to call home. Now, this is a vision statement, but do you believe that, and I'm asking this about the general plan as well, it seems to me that the words that I see over and over in the general plan are words like affordable housing, infill, sustainability, density, compact urban design, and diversity. Excuse me. And will the general plan, as it's reviewed and redone along with the housing element, are these the visions we'll see from that? And if so, why are we so far from the vision?
I think you've overloaded my circuits on that. I think that
when I hear you read that,
the first thing that comes to my mind is, what planet are you from? This is aspirational as of 2011 for 2030, our build-out, and we've just had a major historic tectonic upheaval caused by the fire, and then it's followed by recurrent wildfires that are bringing home in spades that we've had climate disruption take place. I think we're going to struggle mightily to come anywhere near the aspirational factors that you just listed. And as I recall, Susan, in our conversation, and we've had some of the same ones with the Smart Growth Advocates group that you and Grace Marvin and Elizabeth Devereaux have been so active in trying to help implement some of these vision points and aspirational values that we have. But I think it's going to take a major grassroots awakening and recommittal to what we see for the city of Chico, and it really is a choice. And usually I get dissed for using four-letter words, but I want to use a three-letter word, and it's not a vulgarity. It's called quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at these values and aspirational components or factors of the vision that the people back in 2010 through 2011 were looking at, can we hope reasonably, rationally, to bring a community that's as divided as it is right now together and focus on what our common values are so that we recognize each other's differences and enjoy and celebrate those differences? Or are we going to get Walmartized in our community development just so we can put more animals into the confined animal facilities?
Right.
I'll be candid. I would say skeptical would be a good term. I'm apprehensive. I'm truly apprehensive that we're going to be able to get our act together, particularly given the current council. I think we're going to have to see more flexibility, more openness and transparency in the way things are done. Otherwise, we're going to just have a turkey shoot here, and we're going to be railroaded through what the economic forces that control the land and the development industry have. And that's not dissing them. That's saying that's a challenge. It's an open and collegial challenge to the development and business community and real estate community that we want you to help us. We want to help you. But it can't be just one narrow sector or slice of a market, because that's the market that makes the most money. Because otherwise, Chico's going to look like Stockton in 5 or 10 years. If we're going to be doubling in, if we're going to double at a 2% rate of growth, which is doubling every 35 years, how are we going to replicate all of our infrastructure for transportation, water, sewer, especially water? We're already overdrawn on the aquifer below the city of Chico for our potable water. How are we going to even meet a 1.5 rate of growth for the city of Chico in order to maintain the quality of life we have now, which is severely degraded?
So how do we maintain a sustainable level of growth? You know, I would like to personally eliminate Stonegate and Valley's Edge as housing developments and work on, as the Smart Growth Advocates is doing, work on infill, density, growing up, not out, having mixed use and inclusionary housing, so that houses within this density area or living units are affordable and meet the needs of the people who are already here. And can we build a wall around Chico and say no big city people allowed?
I think the state government will probably be coming for you with the black helicopters if you try to do the wall around Chico. And that isn't really who Chico people are.
That's true.
Those of us who are more focused on environmental issues than some of the other members of the community, I think we all share a common love for Chico, which makes it unique and makes us want to make it sustainable. But it's going to have to mean a significant change in how we view providing housing and shelter for people, rather than trying to facilitate starter castles for whoever wants to come here. I want to go back one thing that you and I touched on in our discussions before this show, and we were talking about an exchange that happened at one of our meetings, and I asked somebody, well, who should be allowed to come to Chico? Do we have a duty to accept everyone who wants to come to Chico here? Do we have a duty, as the city council have a duty, to accommodate everybody who wants to come to Chico? Because if that's the case, how long is it going to be before we destroy the aspects and the dynamics of this community that make it desirable? How do we protect it without having some control over our rate of growth? How fast is it going to come? How many people do we envision being here? And then, given those metrics and those numbers and evaluation, how do we best accommodate them so that we can have affordable housing for a broad range of people here? I'm not hopeful. You help me. I'm asking for you and Steve on this, because I've broken my pick on it, and I don't see that process coming about, at least through this housing process so far.
Well, and I'm going back to my wall again. I don't see how you can control that. You know, if housing, we've tried to ask for, you know, a gold line on the east side of the city, where we don't build into the foothills and we don't build out and out and out and out. And there are people who want to do that, and they're people with power and money, and they have Gallagher on their side, who's making it, who's, you know, kind of greasing the wheels for those kinds of things to happen. So I don't see how we get control over that.
I'm sure we're getting close to the end of the show, and I want to make sure that I emphasize something very strongly,
Please
which do. I think that you and and Smart Growth Advocates and a lot of other people in Chico want to have. I want to say on the air, I want to make a clear, focused, conscious effort to reach out to people who disagree with what they're hearing today that we're talking about, or agree. But we need to have outreach, and we need to start a dialogue between the different views and the people who share them. Because I am constantly amazed, to be candid with you, I am constantly amazed positively and hopefully at what happens when you sit down and you have a frank, face-to-face, even then with a mask, a face-to-face discussion with people who you have differences with. If you work on the relationships, you can find the shared values in the areas of where there is room for compromise. But so long as we have this strident we and they folks and us and them, and there's only one point of view, which is the only right point of view, we're going to be locked into a internecine struggle and strife for the next 20 years, and it's going to be really bad in the short term because we'll still be learning how to adapt to the client disruption changes that are being brought to this community, Susan.
Yeah,
and I
well
hope that's
said.
A response to your question. I'd love to hear what you want to wind up with your show.
Well, I that was well said. I agree with you. We interviewed Robert Hagen a few years ago. We've interviewed him twice. He wrote a book called I'm Right and You're an Idiot. And what he's talking about is the toxic level of discourse and the inability of people to come to a way to talk to each other that allows them to exchange ideas. And he sees the exchanging of stories as really important. And we have a lot of community stories. I'm looking for the venue in which we could do that. Maybe Ecotopia is one way. Maybe get more people on with multiple perspectives.
Well, I don't know what you all would suggest, but obviously once the pandemic settles down a little bit, part of what was great about Chico back in the day, as recently as before the pandemic, is I've never been in a community that's as sociable. I mean, that people like people, and they like to get out, and they like to be open, and you can go out for dinner and sit next to somebody, and even if you don't agree with everything they have to say, you meet them, and you leave the restaurant, and you've made a new friend. Chico's always been open. I really hope we can return to that as the pandemic winds down and there's less pressure on everybody to be in this survival mode of hunkered down in our own bunkers.
Agreed.
Thank you, Richard, for being on Ecotopia this evening. Our guest has been Richard Harriman. He's a longtime Chico attorney, general counsel for the Northern California Environmental Defense Center. He's a visionary and he's a protector of our quality of life, and we're grateful for all he does in our community. I also want to thank Susan Chudy, who listeners can tell is really well informed on this housing topic. She's active in Smart Growth Advocates, participating actively in trying to get smart growth into our areas. So, Susan, you played an unusual role tonight, less an interlocutor than a participant. Thank you, Richard and Susan, for being on Ecotopia this evening.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, too.
Really appreciate you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road. And although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place yours. Trouble, it might drag you down.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. Coming up at 6 tonight, it's North State Give and Take with Bobby Tryon. Tonight she'll be discussing the Northern Regional Center, and next week she'll explore the Tykert Pools. Also then at 6:30 tonight, it's Ginger Nichols with Radioactive, and on Thursday this week at 6 o'clock as part of KZFR's public affairs programming, Imagining Community will continue its year-long series on water. This one will feature Sacramento Source to the Sea with details about an upcoming project that starts on March 14th. Also, naturalist Rodbert Dreesen with the magic of Upper Park.
Dresden.
And Jim Brobeck of Aqua Alliance on the diversion infrastructure, and farmers Eric Chisler and Franz Stupnagel.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico. Contact us at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. We'd like to hear any feedback about shows, suggestions for shows, or people you'd like to hear us interview, questions about any of the topics we've covered. For example, how can we engage a diverse community into discussion about what we want our community to be? Let us know if you have a public service announcement that would be of value to the community that you'd like to have aired, and we'll do that too.
Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week, and not enough time to play the music. Here is North State Give and Take.
Possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Kinney Nursery and Topsoil. Celebrating 50 years of providing bulk soils, organic fertilizers, high-octane soil amendments, and a large selection of landscape materials, Kinney Nursery and Topsoil specializes in helping you grow everything from tomatoes to cannabis. Deliveries are available from Sacramento to the Oregon border. More information on Facebook at kennynursery.com. And by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling 530-898-9525.